Colonel Collins, Rio 4. Now, we're talking about your 2 weeks at Preoctu at Rootham, Kent. Was the training you did there very similar? Was it just a sort of concentrated version of what you'd already done? Or were there some new aspects that you can recall?
I think the former, probably. There may have been something a little bit more. There must have been something more, should we say, intellectual at that stage, because you had to be assessed and your student ability to be an officer.
Do you remember what that side of things was?
No, I don't remember. The two things that stick in my mind about that place was how jolly tough it was, how physically tough, hard work, doing assault courses and that sort of thing. That was just, obviously I had to try and see how tough people were, they could take. A couple of other things I know, I've already mentioned the business of having to run up that escarpment, and that was pretty fatiguing. And the other thing I remember was the latrines there, because up in the barracks here, of course, we had properly built latrines, but this was just a field camp, and there were rows of just thunder boxes on a hole dug in the ground, separated by just Hessian screens, but all open at the front. And there was sort of a bank of about 8 or 10 of these things. And so it got rid of any inhibitions you might have had about any modesty or anything like that.
We haven't really mentioned assault courses. Had you had them at any
primary training?
What was the assault course like? How tough were they?
Remember
it was tough.
I can't remember the particular one there, because I've done assault courses in various places. But they were things where you had a wall like a barricade, and this had to be scaled, and then you had to walk across a narrow plank and this sort of thing, in full battle order. It was just to see that you had the capacity to, and the versatility you had to cope with these little things. You might have had to crawl through a very confined space, and then people were letting off thunder flashes around and this sort of thing, just to intimidate them.
Now, that was a sort of the physical test. The mental test you don't remember, but would they take the form of exercises to show leadership, or would you just be taking a squad through a drill, or do you remember anything at all?
I would say some of the latter. We had to take it in turns to lead the squad, I would think. Although my mind is jumping ahead a bit to the commissions board and that sort of thing.
Well, let's move ahead from Rootham now. And you were sent. You passed that course.
Yes.
Did most people pass that were in your batch? Would you say?
Yeah, I suppose most did, but many people stayed for the driver training, and I rather did myself. That was rather fun. They did that for about 3 weeks of driving around a vehicle. I had acquired the ability to drive a vehicle. I'd never driven on a road in my life. But at the school playing field, we had a little converted private car, so a bullnose Morris Cowley made into a truck. And I used to drive this thing around. I learned to do it. And I had the neck, when I asked who could drive, I had the barefaced cheek to say as I could. And so I went out, and I was put in a 3-ton lorry, and all the rest of the squad in the back, we took it in turns, and drove for about 5 miles around the roads of Kent, and was passed. So I did myself a disservice, because I had to rush straight off to Oxford in the winter, whereas many of my chums had a nice cushy 3 weeks in driver training.
Now, which Oxford were you sent to?
I was sent to Douglas, Isle of Man. Exactly remember the journey up there and that sort of thing. What I do remember particularly was the sea crossings in the old SS Snaefell. And my goodness me, we were allowed a break at Christmas. I think I told you I was there 4 months. And so Christmas came just about the middle of our day. And I seem to remember we had to leave for Christmas. And so I did altogether 4 crossings from Liverpool to Ireland. Three of them were absolutely horrendous. I totally ceased at the whole time. Fortunately, the last one, when I came back in my officer's uniform, it was was calm and fine. So I remember that part of the journey, somewhere from home, of course, from Cornwall.
Now, what about the course there, four-month course? How was it organised?
Well, we were billeted in the Villiers Hotel on the seafront, and we were a particular village, only 166 Octave, if you know that, it's OCTU, it's coming back to my mind now, and our particular intake, we only had to guess roughly how strong we were, but I think we were all in that hotel. It could have been something like 100 or so chaps. Now, at that point, a lot of those, or a fair number, were people who had seen active service and other service, and were there as, perhaps as corporals or king's corporals, and then, of course, they would make all cadets or all cadets together. And, we had a very formal training period, training day, with quite a lot of classroom work, as well as...
What sort of thing would we be dealing with in a classroom?
Well, we must be, discussing field tactics and things like making an appreciation of the situation, making a plan, and then we did a number of sort of general knowledge things, and each person had to get up and give a little lecturette for 5 minutes, this sort of thing. A whole lot of classroom work.
The business of making an appreciation and a plan, I mean, was there anything of note about that you recall?
Well, I mean, that was, it's the way the army does things and trains people to systemize one's procedures when confronted with a situation. We had a standard training for that.
And what do you remember what it was?
Well, I think I forget exactly how this sometimes I've done, but when making an appreciation, the first thing is you've got to settle what the aim is, and that is just one item, and the aim has got to be succinctly expressed. And then you enumerate the factors affecting the achievement of that. You start with the situation. You start with the situation and outline the situation, both your own troops and the enemy. And then you define the aim. Then you enumerate the factors affecting the situation and try to make sort of preliminary discussions. Then you discuss the course is open. My goodness, it's coming back to me. The course is open, and then you select the best course, and that is the course which will be followed, which will lead into the plan which you then make, in order. Of course, the cynics say that what you do is you make the plan first, then you write the appreciation to fit it. But I think we would have been introduced to that there.
Would you be studying, past battles or skirmishes?
We've done military history. Yes, we've done some military history there, I'm sure.
Was it? Was there a lot of it about the Great War, the First World War, or would it be really theoretical?
We would have done military history. I use that advisedly because I don't think a great deal of time was spent on that. But there must have been some reference.
So there was a strong classroom element. Yes. What else would you be doing?
Well, we had a parade. We had a muster parade each day, and of course we had to keep ourselves properly organised. We had to observe the routine. And
were you expected to be kitted out in a more smart fashion than you had been earlier? Were they looking for higher and higher standards of appearance?
Well, yes, I think so. And I mean, to share, one had taught to set a standard. But I must tell you, the thing that was uppermost, it was very prominent in my memory there, is, you see, now I was a very young recruit. I mentioned earlier about being at school. I was youngest of my men, and so I was, I wasn't the very youngest, but still I was a very young recruit, and not particularly large of stature and so on. And so I was on the recruit's pay. I'd only been in the army, and my parents weren't very well off, and so from that meagre recruit's pay, I used to make an allowance, an allotment, to my mother. So I was left with the princely sum of 10 shillings a week to live on. Now, the rations weren't all that, having got all the exercise rations, the rations were for a growing lad, as it were not over generous, and everybody relied on being able to get a bun or something in the canteen, and I had to eke out the pence, you know, very, very carefully to allow myself to have a cup of tea and a bun in the morning. So, but then, and I mentioned there were some people there who were sort of who were corporals and sergeants, and they were on corporals and sergeants' pay. Some of them with marriage allowance as well, you know. I mean, they were rolling in money compared with me. And so I used to, for a fee, blanco their kit. So when other people were out, you know, in the pub or something, I was down in the cellar very often, blankoing their kit. I remember I used to blanco a chap's small pack and his basic equipment and gaiters for a shilling. I didn't clean the brasses as well. That was, I got pretty addicted to this. It didn't take me many minutes to do it. But so I sort of supplemented my meager pay by doing that.
What about the whole question of private means? Because, I mean, until fairly recently before then, officers had been expected to have some private means, or, you know, well, certainly in the mess.
Yes.
Was that a worry to you? Because
No, not at all. I mean, that was when you were speaking of the regular army now, before the war, but I mean, during the war, I mean, we were just being put through a sausage machine to produce emergency commissioned officers.
So there was no hangover of that?
Absolutely none, no. No. I mean, the distinction was the one I explained.
So, what about the rest of the training? Was that, again, almost repeat recruit training?
No. We did some very substantial exercises there. I mean, I marched practically all over the Isle of Man. And, you know, that was pretty arduous, too. And both by day and night, we would go out on these long approach marches, and then we would do simulated an attack, with live ammunition in some places, or we would dig a fence in position and so on. Then we'd do the same thing at night, and we would take in turns to be presumed commanders.
How realistic was this, in your view, in comparison with what you were to face in Italy?
Well,
or how valuable was it, is another way of looking at it.
I'm reflecting on that, because there's sort of two sides of the same thing. One is, I think the training really was very thorough and was as realistic as it could possibly have been. Now, not at Octo in particular, not only at Octo, but at the battle schools, the divisional battle school and the school of infantry, which I went to later. The training for an infantry subaltern was, and I felt totally on top of that training. I mean, I could do it, I could lead an attack and make a plan and put in the assault and all that sort of thing with confidence. But, just jumping ahead of it, the first time I went into action, this, I think, is a common experience.
We'll come to the differences when we come to that action. So, the training was a mixture of hard physical work and then exercises at the end. So you'd do a long march and then an attack at the end of it, or a defence or whatever. Anything else new about the training?
I'm thinking, I can't recollect. I mean, I mentioned the
Did they try and inculcate you in how to be a good officer, what was important?
Oh yes, we must have had a lot of that. I'm sorry, we must have had a lot on used to be called Man Management, and that sort of thing, of course, and probably requiring loss and that sort of thing. Yes, we certainly would have had that.
But it doesn't stick in your mind too well.
I I've got a recollection of a lot of classroom teaching, so you know, quite a lot of that must have been covered.
And how did you do on the course, would you say?
I think not brilliantly. I mean, I think adequately well. I don't remember us being graded or anything like that. And I don't remember us having cadet ranks, although I suppose we did. But I certainly didn't have one of them. I was not a cadet NCO or anything like that, I can recall.
But you passed the course?
I passed the course, yes.
And at what point were you invited to decide what regiment or what you were going to do? Or were you not given any
towards
choice?
Towards the end of the course, when we were, you know, when the pretty certain one was going to be commissioned. Now, I was blissfully ignorant of this. I mean, I had no background in the army at all, really. I was very much in the dark. I mean, I had some perception of the difference in the different characteristics of the army service, obviously. And I remember that when I jumping back to Lowry, when I joined as a recruit, we were all given an assessment by the army psychologist, you know, as to what we were most suited for. And I was put down for tank crew. I think that's mainly because I was quite small, and I could get in and out of the tank. And I was, you know, I could be relied upon to point the gun in the right direction, that sort of thing. But I didn't think you wanted to go in the Royal Army Corps. I mean, what I thought I wanted to do was to go into the County Regiment. I mean, that was about all I'd seen the DCLI operating here.
Now, I just wonder, because with your university background, you had some maths in there and physics.
Yeah.
I just wondered about the corps that were more suited, possibly the Royal Engineers or the artillery. Did you think of them, or did they just not appeal?
Yeah, I can't remember whether I thought them or not. And once again, as I said to you earlier, whether it's a fault of memory or immaturity at the time, I suspect it was much of the latter. I was not really, you know, au fait with all the characteristics of the various arms in that sort of way.
So you put down the DCLI.
I think I must have done, yes. And I mean, to show how naive I was, I put down as second choice the Black Watch. Because I just thought it had a rather romantic sounding name, you see. And I had no idea that it was made up of jocks from the Gorgons.
And what happened then?
Then we would do the, you know.
You got your choice.
Came, we got no choice. I was informed I was commissioned to be commissioned into the DCLI. Oh, and the regiment, the tailors came. That was a great thing. Of course, they all had to have smart service dress uniforms made. And just a little aside, I remember I used to be in the Duke of Cornwall's infantry, and the military tailor, military tailor, so-called, who came to do it, got the regiment confused with the Duke of Wellington's regiment and set me up with the Duke of Wellington's lanyard and things like that. Which, when I came back here to Bodmin, Mr. Webster, the local tailor in the 4th Street here, said, what are you wearing that for, you know? I was not sufficiently clued up myself to know what was wrong with it.
Did you get a grant to cover the full cost of your uniform?
I think we did, yes. We did.
So you were posted from the Isle of Man to back to Bodmin?
No.
Oh, sorry.
No, I was posted then to a holding battalion. I probably came back here for a short leave on having been commissioned. But then I was posted to a holding battalion, which was manned by the Oxfordshire and Buckinghamshire, Light Infantry, as it happened, Ox and Buckside Infantry, and Woodhall Spa in Lincolnshire.
And how did you fit in with them?
Well, that was an absolute education, of course, for me. I mean, first of all, for the first time, you know, I had some minimum income. And at that time, I mean, it wasn't but I suppose that certainly there was income, you know, was riches indeed to me. I didn't have any income at all, but not virtually, all the time I'd been in the army. But anyway, there we were, and we had all this intensive training. I well remember going along to the mess, and as often happens to people, it's very difficult suddenly to be an officer and to avoid calling the next officer you see, sir. And I don't remember arriving there, and this chap called Cousins, a very nice fellow, sort of met me at the door, and he'd been there a week or two before me. And of course, I addressed him as sir. He said, well, don't call me sir. He said, I'm the same rank as you are. And anyway, went into this mess, and it was wartime, but the catering was beyond my wildest imagination. Anything I'd ever seen before, either before the war or during, at home or anywhere. I mean, it was the teas and cream cakes and things we had at tea time and all this sort of thing, and the multi-course lunches, and you know, it was absolutely, it just astonished me. And I well remember the one thing I learned from the CO there, and I'm sure it was a charming chap, Colonel Jarvis, and he had one important rule, and that was that after you read the newspaper, you left it folded to the outside. And this was in 1943, and all this intensive training, was really very amusing. He was from the old school.
What was, could you explain just for the time, what the purpose of the holding battalion was?
Well, I suppose until they sorted out what unit you would go to. And there was a place where you were located and shown some soldiers and given some soldiers to command.
Was it actually an Ox and Bucks battalion, or was it,
well,
just that they were running it?
Well, it was, nominally, it was the 43rd Battalion, Ox and Bucks by injury, as I recall. And it was a holding battalion. Various other regiments had holding battalions of that kind. And there were people who were being kitted out and, polished up to ready to join drafts to go to regiments that were going overseas or whatever.
So, were you given a platoon?
I don't remember being given a platoon as such, but I think I must have. Yes, I was. I do remember that. I do remember with some embarrassment, really, because, we did a lot of marching, and marching in on the Lincolnshire Plains, I might tell you, was a very, very boring business, because you can march for an hour along a straight road, and you can look back and see where you were at the previous hour's break, and it's rather, the spirit of it. But we did a lot of marching, and we did physical training and more battle courses. While I was there, I was sent off to do the divisional battle school.
Which one were you sent to?
Oh, I can't remember. I really can't remember.
Where, do you know where it was?
I don't think I remember that. I know that I went then to the School of Infantry Battle School, which was then at Barnard Castle.
Well, what did you learn at the divisional battle school? What did you do there?
I can't distinguish in my memory now.
Between the two?
No, I'm sure I went to two battle schools
at
a different level, and I do remember.
Let's look at them together then.
Yeah.
What kind of thing did you do at the divisional one and at Barnard Castle?
You did that sort of arduous physical training in full kit, in battle order. We've done before, but you did it sort of carrying full equipment and assault courses, forced marches, night marches, attacks up steep hills, going through smoke and under simulated fire, and actually coming under sort of live fire to the point that you had to crawl, or else you were liable to be, at least they said you were liable to be hit if you didn't crawl. Really flat and that sort of thing, and pretty realistic, very realistic, as far as one could tell.
And all at a greater level than you'd experienced before. So it was on an upward curve. It was always getting harder.
Yeah, we're getting harder and more demanding. Yes, I think it's fair to say that.
Even worse than on the escarpment in Kent.
Well, yes, I mean, that was somebody's idea of bestiality. We could make us run up and down there.
So that was a one-off in that, but it was very tough.
It was, yes, it was hardening, you know, we were being hardened off to. And then, the soldiers, they did combat training. I'm not sure if you went there.
Did they have this thing, an actual thing called battle drill? Because that's something that some people seem to have had a lot. Do you know? Could you explain what battle drill was? Because it seems
battle drill was the idea. Of battle drill was it was an attempt to reduce the tactical procedures at junior level, at subunit level, or unit subunit level, to a visible drill on the square. So, for example, if one was to do an attack, an assault, let's say in arrowhead formation, that's self-explanatory, I think, and the people who are echelon back are supporting those in terms of looking out of the flanks, then you actually did this on the parade ground. And the chap who had the Bren gun to give the supporting fire on the little group, they sort of marched or ran off to a flank with a flag or something like that, and they stood on the square where they would be, and so it was done as a drill. And it was really just to give the format to people in their minds, so they knew.
How many of these drills were there? There's the arrowhead. Were there a lot of them?
I think, you know, there would be one for a frontal assault and an arrowhead thing. There would have been one for a right flanking attack and a left flanking attack. Beyond that, I can't really remember.
Now, one old soldier we interviewed told me that part of battle drill was that each man learnt the role of every other man in his unit, and also what they were carrying. You know, was that the case when you were? So that you'd know who carried the Bren and who carried and what officers.
Well, I think, yes, I mean, coming back to me, I think that was part of the drill. People were numbered off, and you knew who was. Edward's duty, yes, I think that they were assigned in some sort of way like that. But to tell you the truth, I don't remember.
Did this battle drill, was it of much use as compared to the actual exercises that you did?
Well, I don't know. It was like doing a dry run, you know, in daylight on the flat in the ground to simulate, and then you adapted, obviously, to the ground when you're actually on the exercise.